Welcome back. Episode 106. We've got Keith.
Yeah.
We've got John.
Back again.
Back again. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks in a row. We are missing.
Oh, no.
One of our stars.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunate. She's doing a little studying.
A little studying.
She's got a little CFA exam coming up. Yeah. So good luck. Shout out to Lisa.
She's not going
to
like that you said that.
What do you mean? She'll be good.
She'll be good. But yeah, we're missing her this week, which is unfortunate. It's been a long time since she hasn't been on an episode.
She's certainly one of the OGs staples. And kind of the staples for sure. So you and I come and go and she sits there, works away. There.
Yeah.
And now we got John. Mm-hmm. John, you got to step up your game.
Big shoes to fill.
All right. So this week, I want to focus on semiconductors. That's kind of the primary topic for me, specifically because we've had a big run-up in semis the last week and a half, 2 weeks, but then also because we've got NVIDIA reporting today, actually, as of recording. So we'll see how that goes. And we'll do some predictions here at the end of that. But two truths and a lie. We're going to start with, obviously, going to be semiconductors. I got Keith back on his ABC.
No, thank you, Tyler.
Away from the 1, 2, 3.
I was missing the last couple of weeks. I think that was those numbers.
that was the issue. Semiconductors make up about 18% of the S&P 500 index today. B, global semiconductor revenue is projected to exceed $2.0 trillion in 2026. And DRAM prices for chips are expected to increase by 125% in 2026.
Got a lot of numbers.
And
there.
I have some notes in here, but I left some things blank.
I just saw so that you guys too, couldn't, you dirty dog.
So you guys couldn't read the notes and see what
that's
the
a good idea, because
right
had a
answer
few of those.
Was. Yeah. Although I did put some charts in here that might give a few of these away. So with that being said, we'll start with Keith.
Oh.
Since he's the growth tech guy.
Yeah, growth tech guy, NVIDIA, who knows what. I think you and I are on TV tomorrow talking about.
Yeah, both of us are on TV. Yeah,
it's crazy talking about NVIDIA results. So hopefully, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about.
What are you on?
Yahoo.
I'm on Schwab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we you know, stay tuned, everybody. We got it covered.
We'll make our predictions today and then be on TV talking about
tomorrow how wrong we were. All right. I'm going to start with A, semiconductors make up 18% of the S&P 500. That is,
I shouldn't have sent you guys that note yesterday.
Well, that is true. Yeah. I'm looking at like technology, for example, in one of the portfolios I manage, kind of looks at the S&P, kind of the relative benchmark and how the weighting in there. And I was looking at that the other day, which shocked me. It was that high, and I don't own that much, so it's been a little bit of a sore spot for me. I own a lot.
Not the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's certainly been. Yeah, and I think that's. exactly how I'm kind of positioned. I think some of those are overvalued. I'm sure we'll get into that here in a second. So I'm saying A is true. Now you got me a little numbers in the next two. I'm not quite sure. I think global semiconductor revenue is projected to exceed $2 trillion by 2026. I think that is true. And DRAM pricing expected to increase by 125 in 2026. I think that's actually probably too low. So I think that's actually a high now, or needs to be higher. So that's where I'm going. C is false. How about that, John?
Okay. I think I was following the same path as you. I don't know if it was... I think that I've heard more about the NAND pricing increasing. So I think he was trying to trip us up there.
Oh, maybe.
And maybe DRAM didn't quite hit the 125. So that's where I was going with this.
Okay.
So you're going C.
So you're going C or B?
I'm going C. Too.
C.
But for a different reason than mine. So we both end up at the same spot.
Well, I got both of you because DRAM prices are expected to increase by 125%. Global semiconductor revenue is only projected to exceed $1.3
trillion
this year, which is a little bit
whiff on me.
but I think by 2030, I think the numbers were about $2 trillion by 2030.
I guess I must have not read the fine print there, John.
But anyways, so yeah. Global semiconductor market. So just for so we'll transition to the semiconductor craze recently, because obviously... the prices for SMH and SOX have been just the ETFs that track the semiconductors have been just going absolutely bonkers.
why don't you set the table why semiconductors have been ripping, I guess, and kind of give a background.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously this whole AI thing, you know, I've been talking about.
There you go.
AI has been obviously in the news the last, really since 2022, mm-hmm. when ChatGPT came out, and all the different competitors that have been following suit. And you could argue that, you know, the hyperscalers are somewhat forced into this AI thing, whether they want to spend on it or not. But at this point, you kind of have to. The problem is data centers cost quite a bit of money.
They do.
And the amount of chips and energy and water for cooling that they take is starting to increase quite a bit. Obviously, the DRAM price is up 125% this year alone, tells you that story. But the demand for chips is getting somewhat insane.
Yeah.
And who came out with the report a couple of weeks ago that said that the CPU to GPU ratio was like 8 to 1? Initially, it was like 1 to 1, and now all of a sudden it's 8 to 1.
Yeah.
And so you're starting to see companies like Micron, AMD, Intel start to do really well, because those are the companies that are
the CPU companies.
They are
versus
in the CPU companies, yep. Whereas Nvidia's the GPU, Broadcom's the ASICs, XPUs. So they're a little bit different. But that's really why we've started to see the stock prices of semiconductors rise so dramatically, is just the pure demand for AI, yep. and the need for it, because you got to build out these data centers, the amount of chips that you need to do it. High powered chips to do it. And there's only a select few companies that can actually produce the chips that they need. So global semiconductor market was just under $600 billion just a few years ago. And now this year projected to be $1.3 trillion. And only what I thought was really interesting was GPUs and custom chips. So Nvidia, mm-hmm. and Broadcom, their type of chips are expected to account for only 30% of that. And that's where you start to get the 8 to 1, 6 to 1
yeah.
ratio.
I imagine a couple of years ago, that number was more like, that 30% was probably more like 5 though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's been a huge growth, because that's really where the growth's coming, because NVIDIA has certainly been the leader in this AI. Anybody thinks of AI chipsets, NVIDIA's the top of the list, you know, Broadcom kind of right behind you, and AMD to some extent, but they have AMD and Intel, these CPUs, not GPUs, and that was kind of the high powered graphics chips.
Yeah, your traditional CPUs are your traditional like computer chips, your smartphone chips,
your desktop
like,
stuff. That's
yeah, it's not like the high powered type of stuff. Whereas the GPUs is where you really get it stands for graphic processing unit. That's really where you get the high powered, the H100, the what's their new one?
Well, the H200, Blackwell. And then, yeah, they got another rib. So I forget the next one starts with an R coming out next year.
Yeah. So that's really where the demand is coming from, is the AI side and building out all of these data centers. And the interesting thing is you have, I think it was Eaton's CEO said they have 11, this is specifically to Eaton, but they have an 11-year backlog for data centers. Is what I think you said on the call. Some 10 or 11 year backlog.
Yeah, that's kind of why these stocks and the net. I mean, we're just going to talk about semiconductors today, but you see networking stocks, all these other kind of data center plays are certainly kind of. NVIDIA was the first one to move on the AI, and just kind of the big picture, and then now it's everything else that touches the network, and especially data centers has been flying. And then I think what surprised a lot of people recently has been the CPU kind of craze. Mm-hmm. Got to have GPUs. And then now with kind of Anthropic and Claude, you know, theirs is more computation kind mm-hmm. of like, you know, we've all used it here. We have Enterprise Claude that we do certain things and PowerPoints and things like that you can tell it a command and it creates it for you.
Yeah.
But then it uses tokens and CPUs, not GPUs, yeah. right? So now all of a sudden that 8 to 1 figure now is closer to back to 1 to 1. And that's why you've seen Intel and strangely enough, names like Qualcomm double in a matter of months, which
yeah,
I think we kind of scratch our head on a few of these moves.
So my question to you guys, and John, I'll start with you. Do you think this type of pace continues for semiconductors in general, for stock specifics, whether it's Qualcomm, Micron, Flex, like any of the semiconductors that continue to run, can the pace of this rise continue?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be stock by stock. We've seen memory stocks absolutely rip in the past couple months here. But if you look back over a little bit, it's kind of been one area stepping up and then another area. So I think that kind of cycle of one kind of subsector stepping into the spotlight could definitely continue for some time. I don't know about the 11 years of backlog. That's kind of hard to see that far into the future.
That's fair. Keith?
I think if you look out a couple of years, I think we still have this kind of hyper growth. I think we're probably a little overdone on the stock sides in the near term on some of these. I think we're getting a little speculative on nature of like a Qualcomm, for example. That stock almost doubled in a matter of a month. Mm-hmm. On a quarter that wasn't very good. Guidance wasn't very good, but they talk now about their importance relative to AI, which is kind of surprising everybody, and that's why the move it's had. But I think we're starting to get a little bit of that frothy stage. But I do think as a whole, semiconductors, you know, I've had this argument before of software versus semi. Semis used to be cyclical. I still think they're somewhat cyclical, but less cyclical than they were in the past. But I do think this hyper growth slows, but I do think they're still going to be there. I do think they're ultimately, I guess think there's still going to be some kind of black swan event that for whether it's power related to chipsets or something, there's going to be a breakthrough that kind of changes dynamic. It won't be probably this year, but maybe next year.
I'm going to throw a curveball into this. So So one of the questions I had was, what if there's any hiccup? But let me ask this, because we're so dependent on Taiwan. So Taiwan Semi is what? I think they make up like 55% of the semi market, mm-hmm. of like actually creating the chips. Yeah. So manufacturing. So a lot of these semiconductor companies that we talk about, a lot of them are more design focused. So they design the chips. They don't actually manufacture them.
Yeah. They're called fabless, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So like a Taiwan Semi is considered what's called a foundry.
Yep.
So like Broadcom, one of my favorite stocks, they're fabless, right? All they do is pure design, and then they go to Taiwan Semi and have Taiwan Semi actually create the chips. And then Taiwan Semi uses ASML for the machines that they use. Yep. So it's kind of tied in, but we're so reliant on Taiwan, obviously Taiwan Semi, and they're headquartered in Taiwan. So we just had a summit between Xi Jinping and Trump. They seem to get along fine, but there's always been this overarching theme of China potentially doing something with Taiwan, mm-hmm. because they're so close. Obviously, China knows that they're a strategic partner of the US and Europe and a lot of other countries. So is there continued risk in China, Taiwan, and is there a way for us to diversify away from just purely Taiwan?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a risk. And maybe that's that black swan thing that comes out of it, whether it's not maybe energy related, maybe something happens to Taiwan and the ability for them to export chips. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would, a lot of things would come to a screeching halt, right? I mean, obviously if whatever you can get, price goes up, but then if you can't get any volume, your numbers don't make sense. And then your valuations get, I would think that would be a net negative for a lot of stocks. I do think the Semiconductor Act, I think was under Biden and Trump. They've had different versions. I think, the reshoring of, but that takes time. I mean, you're talking years,
yeah.
not months.
I mean, 4 to 5, because Taiwan Semi's Arizona plant, they started that back in 2021.
Yeah.
So they're just testing, I believe, to get it up and running. We're in 2026.
So I do think they need to, I think they're going on the right path. They probably need to speed that up, just to prevent for national security purposes to have, it's way better for ultimately longer term if you worried about outside of the US security breaches and Taiwan and China relationship on top mm-hmm. of that, yeah, that certainly could be the thing that, upsets the apple cart of,
yeah,
kind of, so I, we don't think about it every day, but I, I do think there's something that happens here in the next year or two. I don't know where it is. I wish I could tell you what it was. That's
Black Swan
event
is, right?
Yeah, that's right. But that's something that usually when you make these projections that everything's going to grow at 50% for the next 11 years or these backlogs, there's something happens.
Yeah. It's, well, that's what I want to get to. So, John, so my question to you is, are we pricing these companies for perfection? And do you think we can continue at this 60%? How long do you think we can continue at the 60% growth rate that a lot of these semis are giving us right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're priced about for perfection. They might have a little bit of upside, but most of it is baked in. And when you're growing at 60%, there's only a certain amount that you can grow at 60%. And when you kind of see that momentum, analysts keep projecting that out. So I think we could keep it up for a couple quarters here, but when you try to stretch it out over multiple years, that's kind of gets to the unrealistic point in my point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get a lot of large numbers, and like Nvidia, I think last quarter, I think they grew 80 some percent year over year. I think it's supposed to be like 35, 40. So you're starting to, and then you go back, they're over 100 at some point in time. So you're getting 100 to 80s to 40s, and you're probably going to normalize in that, I don't know, 20 to maybe 35. But, and then the valuation now, it used to be at 75 multiples. You know, it was just on that hyper growth. And now it's at, I think, 18 times next year's PE. So I would argue that's relatively cheap. Right.
But then you have Intel trading at 75.
Yeah. I looked this morning. Intel's trading at 75 for similar growth. Right. Everybody's hoping that, you know, that whole shift from GPU to CPU, and which again, I'm a little more suspect in that whole thing. I think if I had to pick one over the other, say, hey, give me the next, even though I'm a little bit more cautious on semis here in the short term, if you give me Intel, Qualcomm versus NVIDIA, I would take NVIDIA. Again, there you go. It's a statement before the quarter tonight.
Love that. All right. So semiconductors do make up about 18% of the S&P. So we got that out of the way in the questions. But what I thought was really interesting, so 10 years ago, it was only 2% of the S&P 500, which is crazy. Because, I mean, you now have the semiconductor industry now makes up, if you add, I don't know the exact numbers, but if you add up like utilities, materials, real estate.
2.5, probably 7 now you're at about.
So they're double those two sectors.
Three sectors
combined, they're double at least.
Yeah.
And when we look back to the dot-com bubble, obviously internet, tech, semiconductors were good stocks to own. Obviously, you probably like the software stocks more because they're the internet, but the backbone to that internet was these semiconductor companies. And at the peak, they were about 8 to 9% of the index. So now you're now double what they were in the dot-com era. So before I ask you the question, just talking about why it's grown so much. So in the last month, SOX, which is the semiconductor index, SOX is a index ETF for semiconductors. 1 month, they're up 18.3%, which is pretty good. Not like shockingly good, but good.
That's pretty solid.
Year to date, almost 60%.
That's even better.
1 year, 132.5%. And then over the last 3 years, 263%.
That's the whole index, not just one stock.
Correct. Yeah. So that's a basket of how many are, I think there's 20 to 30 in there.
Yeah, that's a good, it's a lot. I mean, you can see one stock, you have these kind of numbers,
that's like meme stock type of returns, but we're talking an index. Like a whole industry is up 263% in the last 3 years. So what I'm curious about is, Keith, you brought up that you're underweight semiconductors in your S&P Core Select portfolio. Yep. So are you getting, give us a reason why that you're underweight. Are you worried about concentration? Is it just the pure performance that you can't, the valuations are starting to get off the charts? Like why are we underweight?
Yeah, it's pure performance and the surprise moving. You know, I'm obviously your favorite stock's been Broadcom. Everybody, if anybody's listening for any length of time, they know that. I like it as well. I own that one. NVIDIA, those are huge names. NVIDIA's the largest name in the market. You know, I think it's over above 8% in the S&P 500, so 8%. And then the rest of the names. So 8% of the 18 is one name. So that's a little, you know, but then I think those two are great. I have a little more problem with some of the other names. The ones I kind of just called out were Qualcomm is probably the one I'm kind of most side-eyed towards.
Like the more analog focused?
Yeah, the analog guys. Because I think those are truly cyclical and everybody's saying they're not, which I've done this long enough. You know, you get these hyper moves, whether it's semis or networking. It's kind of reminds me of back when the fiber build out for the internet.
Yeah.
Kind of, I think we're getting to that part of the semi point. They're just grabbing for anything that seems, oh yeah, this hasn't moved yet. Intel's been a disaster for 2 decades almost. When, now, what, it's
5 years ago, they decided to get back into the foundry business and it's just costly.
No, the one good thing is the government invested in back on the stock.
Actually, talk about that because I don't think a lot of people remember that.
It's crazy. So,
John, did you know that the government invested in Intel?
No.
Yeah, so let's.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact. You probably remember it's the I think around $25 on Intel, somewhere around there.
$20 to $25, they bought it.
Yeah, and I think they're up. I think it's like $50 or $60 billion on the. They took a 10% stake in Intel, and everybody's like questioning it, and it was like, it's like what's it? It's kind of with the bill of the foundry. That's what they were pushing for, right? You literally had the.
It was part of the kind of the CHIPS Act.
The CHIPS Act. Yeah. I think that was under Biden to start, right? And then Trump kind of another version of it. Yeah. But anyway, you know, not getting I think political.
Trump added to the position?
Yeah. So they both were kind of going down. You know, bringing CHIPS Act. You know, security. But then Trump actually put a 10% stake into Intel when it was kind of floundering around and they couldn't figure out what to do. And there were, you know, concerns that Intel was going to go under, which is absolutely shocking because they were by far, you know, if you go back years, that the leader that, and then they got passed by NVIDIA, AMD, and they're kind of now the last one on the rung for producers.
If any corporate person looks at their computer, they probably have an Intel sticker on their computer.
On their computer, and that's what's shocking. So anyway, government took last year, no one really talks about it anymore, a 10% stake, and some of the investors like, I'm as a capitalist, don't like government investing in companies because of unintended consequences. But the stock is now up 6 or 7 fold from the investment. And no one's even talking about it. I think it literally, if they cashed out, it would probably be like a $50 billion.
Let's get our Intel dividends from the government.
it's amazing. So I don't think the government, obviously they made that investment, but I think it's the more the recency. The stock didn't do anything it got a little bit of a bump, but it's not until recently that all of a sudden the stock's moving. It was like, that looks like a genius investment for the...
Whoever had that idea.
For the government, yeah. And I don't know who it was in the government, but it's... But knowing, you know, John's an investment guy, doesn't even...
But when they do decide to, like, what does that mean for Intel when the government decides to...
monetize, sell it?
Yeah, sell it.
Well, there's other buyers out there at this price, right? Yeah, it's a marketplace. Market, so it's,
but do you think that'll have any... consequences on the stock? Or
I think they just bought it because to give confidence in that Intel is going to be around to make sure that they were going to continue to have the building out of the foundries here in the U.S. And so that kind of gave, you know, management confidence that, you know, they'd be fine because in essence they had a government backstop. But now with where the stock value is, they can go out and raise capital and do a secondary and continue along their way. It's a great investment. And it's like no one talks about it. Like, dang, that's good. So, but my point is, why am I underweight? I think there's names like, I think Intel's overvalued. I think Qualcomm, the memory names, you know, they're hyper of any names that, you know, outside of all the stocks in the S&P 500, I think those are the kind of the most whippy and kind of cyclical, just like a leverage of price up and down, you know, but the pricing is up huge, but the valuations are still trading at like 6-8 times, is even though the stocks have been up 300%, just because their earnings have gone up that much. So they're not, so you can make the argument they're not expensive, but all of a sudden that game changes too when you don't get the pricing and all of a sudden your pricing gets cut in half 1 quarter and you're like, oh, whoops.
Well, so let's switch to that. So, because John had brought up NAND pricing and one of the questions was about DRAM. So DRAM prices are expected to rise 125% this year. So to your point, if you don't get the 125% increase, all of a sudden your valuation looks
ridiculous. Yeah, it can get cut in half. Your 8 multiple goes to 16 just overnight.
Right. And so to John's point, so DRAM is dynamic random access memory. And then you have to, on top of that, you have NAND flash, which is a combination of not, it's a not and, which is non-volatile flash memory. So you kind of combine the two. So NAND flash prices are actually expected to be up 234% this year. So if you don't get that pricing increase, you, the stock is toast, right? So what, John, what I want to ask you is, because you've obviously been watching it, seeing the memory and the DRAM and NAND prices. So do you think we get that price? Truly, do we get that 125 and 234? And what do you think the demand for the data centers continues to push those prices higher?
I think for the memory stocks, it's going to be kind of more of a windfall than a change in trajectory of the demand.
Okay.
So I think you should kind of look at it as like a 1 to 2 year kind of boost in revenue rather than a permanent, permanent new level of revenue. Companies like, I think SanDisk was at like $30 at the beginning of the year, and now it's up in the 600s. So that's
it's
a crazy move.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and if you've been around long enough, this is more than the normal, but you see these moves where stocks kind of double or triple in a short period of time, and then all of a sudden you look a year later and they're back to where they were or below. I do think you probably phrased it right. That's more of a windfall right now, not a permanent adjustment higher, but the windfall could last longer than I expected to.
Well, and I don't think going back to the short-term memory of things, we had a semi down cycle in 2022, right? Like there was too much supply. We came out of COVID. There was not enough supply. So prices went crazy. Stocks went crazy. And you and I go to Detroit quite a bit. There's freaking cars sitting on
all over. Yeah.
Just sitting on the side of the road because they can't finish the cars because they don't have the chips to do it. And then also now we're in this like super cycle. So in like 2 years, what happens to these stocks when pricing actually could go down and you're sitting at 70 times multiples on some of these stocks?
Yeah, that's why I worry. I guess that's the point why that I'll own the ones I like. And then the ones that I think, in my mind, I think are a little more speculative that could have this reverse that, yeah, it could be wrong and these stay hot longer than expected. But
you're starting to bake in a lot of the future growth when you're sitting at 70 times for Intel.
Yeah, and it just takes times. It takes one hiccup somewhere in the supply chain. Just like 2022 is probably a good example of that. You just takes one something that somebody can't get, whether it's actually some kind of special minerals or if it's whatever, and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, we missed our quarter because of supply constraints. You're like, investors don't care. And then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, that's maybe lost revenue. Sometimes you can miss a quarter and then it just push forward. Sometimes it's like, well, your competition's taking it or maybe a new technology just came and it's like, oh, sorry. Okay.
That's not a dynamic that I even bring up was the just pure supply.
Disappear. Yeah. Right. There's
right. I've been focused on demand, but you have the potential supply constraints.
Seagate just came out this week and said they're having supply issues. So I'm like, at some point in time, people will care. We'll see.
At some point. Okay. Last one. And then we'll get to the NVIDIA questions. So I thought this was interesting. So KPMG does a semiconductor industry conference. And so apparently at the conference, the overall confidence of what they called industry experts, I don't know if that's CEOs of companies. I don't know if it's the who exactly attends these and answers the questions, but the outlook from industry leaders showed 93% of them expected semiconductor revenue to grow. I guess that's not crazy to think.
No.
Right? Just based on pure demand right now. But what I thought was interesting was they do a confidence index for the semiconductor industry. It was at 63, which is the third highest reading ever. Are we getting a bit over our skis on this, John?
Yeah, I think when you are setting, I mean, it's not record highs, but the third highest, you're kind of setting yourself up for too much future earnings and kind of getting over your skis, as you said. So I definitely think that it's a good place to be wary rather than full blow ahead with semis.
Keith?
Yeah.
No, similar?
I think we're getting over our, keep it short and simple, we're getting over our skis. It's, I do think there'll be something that just kind of, I think the trend, don't get me wrong, I think we're in the early innings of AI and semiconductors are important. I think you still want to own them. It's just, I think in the very, very short term here, I think there's probably a pullback in the,
yeah.
In the,
cause coming. I mean, what happens if, let's say NVIDIA creates some, like their next chip, takes away the energy constraints, takes away the need for significant cooling, and you just need less chips.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the
other
the law of advancement would suggest that you continue to, the next iterations are better and better and better at a significant rate. And so whether it's my favorite name, Broadcom, whether it's NVIDIA, whether it's AMD, Micron, whoever, if they all of a sudden create some chip that is this magical thing because of the advancements, at some point, you don't need as many.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately where I think happens. I think we get some event that kind of upsets the apple cart. Everybody seems to forget about DeepSeek just a year and a half ago, too, or two years ago. Now it's, people have short memories of what can happen to change the thing. And that's why I think, and then, so if that happens, something I think like that's going to happen. And so then all of a sudden these energy build outs, these, all these different plays kind of get kind of turn on sideways. And again, so I think AI
your
continues.
Nuclear names.
Yeah. All those, whatever it's going to be, depends on what this advancement is. If it's kind of what you say, or this Taiwan situation, one of those kind of things that people aren't pricing in, then I think a lot of stocks get hurt. But I think the ones that can actually do it, if that's like the silver bullet of making things cheaper, easier, faster, or something like that, then that stock will probably be a home run and people gravitate towards that and leave some of these other names that probably don't have as bright a future.
Yeah. All right. Fun stuff. Well, not so fun. So true Minnesota fashion, Minnesota sports are done. We talked about our thoughts last week, who we thought was going to advance and not advance. And was that last week or 2 weeks ago?
Boy, it's probably 2 weeks, a week and a half ago.
Either way, Minnesota sports are done, but we do have NVIDIA earnings tonight. So we're going to take some bets. After the earnings report for NVIDIA tonight, in 1 month and in 1 year, will the stock be higher or lower? Let's start with 1 month, John.
All right. I think they'll beat earnings, but I think following it'll be, because there's so many eyes on it and there's so much expectations for it, they usually kind of see a pullback. So I think in the 1 month they will be lower, even though the earnings will be decent.
Okay. So then, sorry, I also have after the earnings report. So 1 month, they're going to be lower. Mm-hmm. After the earnings report,
I think lower as well.
Lower as well. In 1 year,
I think 1 year they'll be higher.
Okay. Keith? Lower, higher.
Yeah. As far as beating earnings, I think that's better be a foregone conclusion that they beat. Otherwise, the stock will be really bad. I do think there seems to be a little bit of shade or kind of a little hatred hanging on at NVIDIA right now, which I think is undeserved. Again, as much as I've been questioning it for the last year and a half, I think for where the multiple is and the growth rate, and I still think they're still one of the leaders. But anyway, I think they beat. I do think the stock trades down for the daily report. So tomorrow they report tonight. 1 month they'll be up, and 1 year I think they're going to be higher.
Okay, so we got lower, lower, higher. We've got lower, higher, higher.
Yeah.
I've got higher, higher, higher.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't surprise me, because I think
they haven't been keeping up.
Yeah.
My reasoning is they haven't, just the overall semi trade, they haven't been keeping up. I think they show good demand. They show good revenue growth. Their margins, I think, do really well just with all the pricing stuff that we're seeing right now. And they're cheap.
Yeah.
Cheaper, right? Like
18,
19 times versus the market at 22. And you've got other CPU companies like your Microns, your AMDs, your Intels trading at 40 to 70 times, depending on the company. I think the stock goes up. Not a lot. I think you trade up like 2%.
Yeah. I think the kind of the consensus is that they trade down from the way the stock's been acting. Yeah. So
I would say higher for.
I like it.
Okay. For all of it.
It's good. We're all on record.
All right. There we go.
We'll be back next week with our report card.
Keith and I'll be on TV tomorrow talking about it.
Stay tuned, everybody.
All right.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Ellegaard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.